Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC, good morning again, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to us today. We're going to hear this hour from the three Democrats seeking the job of Manhattan District Attorney. Of course, Robert Morgenthau is retiring after many, many years. He's been in office since the 1970s. Democrats traditionally win these races, so even if there's a Republican opponent in November, which at the moment I believe there is not, whoever wins this primary on Tuesday will almost certainly become the new Manhattan DA, succeeding Robert Morgenthau. This has been a very hard-fought campaign, and as primary day comes close, we thought you would like to hear on this program from all three of these candidates, so we're going to do about 10 minutes with each right now. Leslie Crocker Snyder, Richard Aborn, and Cy Vance Jr. They have all worked for Morgenthau at one time or another, and we will hear from them in turn, beginning with Leslie Crocker Snyder. Welcome back to WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Your background, a partner at Kazowitz, Benson, Torres, and Friedman, LLP. You founded the Sex Crimes Protection Bureau.
Prosecution, forgive me, Bureau.
You are a special corruption prosecutor and a judge. You have endorsements including Ed Koch and major police groups. But a lot of voters will remember that you thought Robert Morgenthau stayed in office one term too many when you ran a tough race against him in 2005. Do you think something needs to be done very differently?
Well, I think that there are many good things about the office. And, of course, I'm an alumna of the office, although my DA was primarily Frank Hogan. I think there's a long way to go in terms of looking forward and building on things. And I have a lot of suggestions. Would you like me to go into them?
Please.
Okay. Well, first of all, my background does play into the suggestions because, as you pointed out, I was an assistant DA for 9 years, an anti-corruption prosecutor, a defense lawyer, and a judge for over 20 years. In Manhattan Supreme Court criminal term. My view of the office is that obviously public safety is incredibly important, but that we have to proactively make every effort to prevent crime. And for 4 years, I've been talking about many of these ideas, one of which is a community-based model in which DAs will be linked with community leaders, community educators, business people, religious leaders, and law enforcement, and we'll be able to move proactively into schools to try to prevent gangs from developing further where they exist, for example. We'll move into public housing. And we will try to keep young people from becoming criminals. If they enter the criminal justice system, we'll offer far more alternatives to incarceration. I'm on the board of a number of those and have used them for years. Kips Bay Boys and Girls Club, the Abraham House Holistic Rehabilitation Center, DARE. I've used the Andrew Glover Youth Program extensively. I presided over some of the worst and most violent cases in the city, but in addition to treating those people appropriately, I always gave young people a second chance. And that is a very big emphasis of what we hope to do going forward, because we know that too many young people are getting criminal records, especially young people of color, and we want to try to avoid that at all costs if we possibly can, if they're not yet violent. So we will have far more alternative and treatment programs, problem-solving courts. I believe the DA should be a spokesperson for every major criminal justice issue.
Now, that all sounds very progressive, but much of the pushback that you're getting is from progressive circles, both over temperament and history. So, for example, Tom Robbins has a piece in this week's Village Voice that goes back to your prosecution of the Columbia University protesters in the 1960s, that quotes an attorney you faced who said you were the only prosecutor who went after the students hard. How do you answer that?
Well, as usual, Tom Robbins is completely inaccurate, and I don't even want to address his remarks because they're not accurate. They're false. Frankly, if you look at my record, I was given about 85% of New York City's most violent cases. I presided as a judge over the most violent cases in this city when we had 2,200 homicides a year, when our kids, including mine, couldn't walk the streets safely. I treated violent people appropriately. But look at my record. I put every young person who wasn't young yet violent into an alternative to incarceration. I have been a progressive. It's just that I had far fewer of those cases than other people. The other candidates in this race are talking about things I've done for over 20 years.
Do you want to get into a spitting match with Tom Robbins? He is a reporter in this town who comes on the show from time to time. You said, as usual, what he reported is false.
Well, I've just found him to be totally unfair in his coverage for me. He's referring to 1968. He's referring to one lawyer. No, I don't want to. I want to talk about my record and my qualifications, Brian, because I think they're far superior to anyone else in the race.
I've also read about the time that you told a convicted rapist and murderer that you wish you could administer the lethal injection yourself, but that you've changed your mind on the death penalty.
Well, I hope you're going to give me an opportunity to address that.
That's the question.
Thank you. When I was sitting in Supreme Court, I heard many horrible cases, but the worst one I ever heard was the case in which I made that remark. I'm so sorry I made it. It was an emotional reaction to the worst case of my life. And what it involved was a beautiful young African-American girl who had been on the fast track at an Ivy League college. And when her apartment was broken into, her boyfriend was knifed, his apartment, knifed in her presence. And as he was bleeding out, dying, the two defendants took turns raping and sodomizing her in his blood and left her for dead. I'm skipping a lot of gory details because this is a radio show. Right. And when I, at sentence, looked at these two, well, I think they were psychopaths, at least sociopaths. They had no remorse. They went on further crime sprees. This girl's life was ruined. She tried to commit suicide. I'm a mother. I was looking at her mother, and I'm telling you that I wanted to weep, and I made a remark I shouldn't have made.
And so the emotion is understandable. But what about the flip-flop on the issue? You were pro-death penalty.
Well, no,
you're
Brian,
now anti-death penalty. Is that not accurate?
I am certainly anti-death penalty, but if you'd let me explain fully, I was never pro-death penalty. I was for the death penalty in two extraordinarily limited circumstances, much narrower than Chuck Schumer's or Hillary Clinton's. But what happened in the last campaign was that I was painted as a pro-death penalty person by the opposition. But that was
who
never,
was Robert Morgenthau?
Yes, but I was never pro-death penalty. However, since then, several things have happened, all of which have convinced me, including leading an investigation into a wrongful conviction case, and of course, following all the wrongful convictions that the Innocence Project and others have exposed. And like Justices Blackmun and Stevens of our United States Supreme Court, I have modified my position. And I think that it's great and important for any person who thinks to listen to evidence, to find out new things, and to be willing to modify their positions. And I have done that.
One police policy question. Since as DA, you'd be working closely with the police. One of the mayoral candidates, Tony Avella in the Democratic primary, has said he would end the stop and frisk policy of the police department. A couple of the public advocate candidates also took that position in their debate the other night. What do you think about that idea?
I have no idea of what he means when he says he would end it. I mean, that you can't stop the police from doing their job. The problem with stop and frisk is that it's been done unfairly in many instances. Stop and frisk is an important crime prevention tool if done properly. What I have said is that I would have someone in my office who would be in charge of reviewing all of these cases because the overwhelming percentage of stop and frisks do not result in any kind of an arrest and do involve minorities. And there is a great perception, unfortunately, probably a reality, that it is unfairly done. So we have to train our DAs to review these cases legally, properly, so that we don't prosecute cases that are unfair. And we need to have someone in charge in the office, not just the normal layers of supervision, but somebody even higher up and more experienced who would review every case in which there's a question of a pretext stop or some other kind of racial profiling.
Leslie Crocker-Snyder with me for just another few minutes. We're doing about 10 minutes each with the three candidates in the race for the Democratic nomination for Manhattan DA to succeed Robert Morgenthau. We'll talk to the other two coming right up, Richard Ayborn and Cy Vance Jr. And a lot of people will take their voting cues from the Times endorsement, the Daily News editorial endorsement, and Mr. Morgenthau himself, and they've all endorsed Cy Vance. What do you want to say, speaking back to those organizations and individuals?
Well, you know, it's the voters that are ultimately going to decide who has the qualifications and who has the record in this case. I've been pushing the glass ceiling for many years, and frankly, there's always been resistance because there are barriers to break, and I'm going to keep on breaking them. I think that if anyone looks at my record, it is so vastly superior to Cy Vance's. He has been, as you know, in Seattle for 17 of the last 21 years, and I've been here through all the worst times in New York, putting my family and my life on the line. We were under police protection for 11 and a half years. Our kids went to school with two cops each because I was here protecting New Yorkers. I was here in every aspect of New York City's criminal justice system, and I presided over the worst cases. Have them look at all the innovations I did, the rape shield law, founding the first sex crimes prosecution bureau, changing the rape laws, advocating for domestic violence victims. I think if they look at my record, then the endorsements are pretty meaningless. And also, I would point out to you that the New York Times endorsed me 4 years ago in glowing terms, calling me a lawyer of great talent and passion who knows how to exercise the power of the district attorney's office with appropriate restraint. And the fact that Cy's father was on the New York Times board for 17 years, I don't know. That's a factor that people can consider. But in any event, I think my record and my qualifications are what the voters should look at. And that's the only thing I ask, because I think if they look at those objectively, then they will find that I have innovated, I have been here for New Yorkers, I have protected New York, and that I am a true social progressive.
One other thing, real quick, one other issue real quick. You criticized, I read, the way Morgenthau went after so much white-collar crime, especially international white-collar crime, from the DA's office. And yet a lot of people really kind of respect him for that. Would you do less of that?
Not at all. I would do more. But what I would particularly do more of, and if you read what I said in accurate context, you'll see that my point was that he was territorial, and I don't want to be like that. I want to cooperate with the federal and other authorities. But I want us to do a lot more. Smaller white-collar cases to protect the residents of New York who are suffering from smaller white-collar crimes, the seniors and the most vulnerable, like the credit card scams and internet crimes and identity theft. So that is my position.
All right. Go ahead. Finish your sentence.
No, NDAs will be trained on all of that.
If you win, who should play you on Law and Order?
Well, you know, I was once asked that, and since I had really devoted no thought to it, I suggested the best person I could think of, Angelina Jolie.
Are you still for her?
Why not? Go for the best.
Leslie Crocker-Snyder, thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. The other two candidates, Richard Ayborn and Cy Vance, coming up next. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're hearing from the three Democrats vying in the Democratic primary next Tuesday to succeed Robert Morgenthau as Manhattan District Attorney after more than 30 years by Morgenthau in that office. We just heard from Leslie Crocker-Snyder, Richard Ayborn, and Cy Vance Jr. to go. Mr. Ayborn is up next. He was an assistant DA in Manhattan from 1979 to 84 under Morgenthau. He's a former president of the Brady Campaign, the gun control group, and president on leave from the Citizens Crime Commission, which is a think tank that studies police issues and advocates on some of those issues. He also manages a major law firm. He's been endorsed by former police commissioner Bill Bratton and Congressman Gerald Nadler, among others. Mr. Ayborn, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. So happy to be with you again.
Same question as I started with Leslie Crocker-Snyder. What would you do differently than the current DA, Robert Morgenthau?
I think there are a number of things. I think we have an enormous opportunity here, Brian, to transform the criminal justice system. I want to continue this very aggressive push against violent crime, but I actually want to accelerate the pace of violent crime prosecutions by bringing in very modern technology, the kind of technology that I work with every day in the law firm that I manage and with the police agencies that I work with. But I also think we have an incredible chance to transform the criminal justice system by transforming the way we treat nonviolent crime by literally shifting the paradigm to a prevention model rather than seeking jail. For far too long, we've asked the question, how much jail time should a nonviolent offender get? I want to ask the question, what prevention program would best help that person get off a pathway to violence? That's the opportunity we have here.
All three of you seem to be talking about that. What distinguishes your approach, if anything?
A number of things. While my opponents agree that people with drug arrests and mental health issues should go into treatment, I think we go much, much, much further than that. I don't want to limit drug treatment to just people arrested for drugs. I think anyone that commits a nonviolent offense that is dealing with a problem with drugs should go into treatment. And the reason I think that is because the data is crystal clear that these treatment programs are far more effective than putting them in prison, and they're far less costly. On mental health, I want to bifurcate the mental health program that we've talked about, have a specialized program for adults, but a highly specialized mental health unit for kids, because the mental health issues that juveniles present are very, very complex. I've also said that I want to go beyond just treating offenders and also look at other victims that come into other people that come into contact with the criminal justice system. There are many victims that come into the criminal justice system that are sorely in need of treatment, and we know that. We know that. And since we have contact with them, we should help them. The woman that gets that has her husband arrested for domestic violence, she may well need help breaking that cycle of abuse that she's subject to. We also know if she has a male child, that if that male child doesn't get some help and he's witnessed the battering, he could well grow up and be an abuser himself. So since we know that data, we should step in early on and link these folks to community-based resources, existing programs that will help them not end up in this pathway to violence.
I want to ask if you would have good enough relationships with the police department if you're elected DA. Obviously, the police and the DA need to work very closely. Your campaign literature takes issue with stop and frisk and the high rates of incarceration for black men. How much are you opposed to the stop and frisk program as it's being run by Commissioner Kelly?
I will have good relationships with the NYPD. I always have, and I intended to continue doing that. You mentioned that I run the Crime Commission. The Crime Commission brings all the various policing agencies together, but I also have very significant responsibilities that involve oversight of the NYPD, and I intend to exercise those. During that horrific period when Mr. Diallo was shot and killed and Mr. Luima was assaulted, I was the person brought in by the city of New York to conduct an independent investigation into allegations that the NYPD was ignoring complaints being filed by civilians. We found that, in fact, they were. We published that information, and we began to get a reversal in that policy. I did that in a way that the police department knew what I was doing. I was open. I was transparent. I sought their input. So they may not have liked the outcome, but they know I was fair in reaching the result. And I will continue to do that as DA.
Do you take the position that Tony Avella and Eric Gioia and Norman Siegel have taken in their debates recently on WNYC and said that the stop and frisk policy should be ended?
Well, no. The stop and frisk needs to be carried out, however, in a lawful way that respects individual rights. We all have the right to walk our streets free from interference by the police unless we've committed an offense or unless the police have very specific cause to stop us. There are now 500,000 people stopped a year in New York City, not Manhattan, in New York City, and less than 10% of them have any action taken against them. The overwhelming number of those 500,000 are blacks and Latinos. So we need to peer very carefully into the policies of the department and make sure that when they stop someone, they're stopping them for a legitimate reason.
So here's how Deputy Police Commissioner Paul Brown characterized stop and frisk on this show just the other week. He said stop and frisk comes in response to a specific reported crime. They then flood the area with police and stop anyone who fits the basic description of the perpetrators to try to get the person before they get away. That necessarily results in stopping a lot of people who don't actually turn out to be the perp and therefore are not arrested. What's the problem with that?
If it's accurate, there's no problem with it. The problem is we got to determine whether or not it's accurate. And since the department is saying that, and they've said that before, I assume they have data to back that up. We need to examine that data. The police department's required to turn data over to the city council, and the DA also has a responsibility in this. So we will actually look at that data and make sure that the police are stopping people for some cause. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not the data supports what the department is saying.
You're not convinced. You made your name on gun control primarily as president of the Brady campaign formerly known, I guess, as Handgun Control, Inc.,
correct.
Right?
Correct.
Do you have the breadth of experience to handle the Manhattan DA's office with the range of cases and the size of staff you'd have to manage?
I not only have the breadth, but I have more experience than my opponents, more relevant experience. I was a frontline prosecutor in the Manhattan DA's office trying numerous cases, handling numerous violent felonies, including many, many homicides. I was a criminal defense lawyer. I'm a civil litigator. I actually manage a very large law firm in New York, a very sophisticated national practice. I deal with lawyers every single day on trial strategy. I have enormous in-depth experience in the law. But I've also gone beyond to seek broad-based reforms to criminal justice problems. Yes, I did run Jim and Sarah Brady's gun control group, and I did that because I saw the devastating impact that guns were having in our neighborhoods. Went out and led the fight behind the Brady Bill, the ban on assault weapons, the ban on large volume clips. When I was in New York, I was asked to investigate the NYPD, seeking broad-based solutions to issues of police oversight and police-community relations. As president of the Crime Commission, I helped lead the fight to expand the use of DNA so that we could better convict people and better acquit people more rapidly. So in area after area after area, I've taken on very big challenges that confront the criminal justice system and achieve results, in addition to having broad, deep experience as a lawyer and as a manager. The Manhattan DA manages a law office with over 550 lawyers in it. That's the kind of work that I do every day.
Let me follow up on one of the things you said.
Sure.
Where do you draw the line when faced with greater and greater surveillance capabilities and DNA sampling of suspects versus privacy concerns?
This is a terrific question, Brian. Unfortunately, there is no bright line. If you read all the cases, both in New York and at the federal level, that discuss this issue, the courts resist drawing a bright line because the technology changes so rapidly. So, for instance, there was a recent case that came out of the New York State Court of Appeals, which said that the police have to get a warrant to use a GPS device. That's a new line, and that's actually a good line. I support that decision. I think it's very important to respect privacy. But it's very hard to define a precise sense of privacy, so these cases will be continued to be examined on a case-by-case basis. The good news about DNA is that in all the years it's been used, both in the United States and the UK, where it's been used for a much longer period, there's not been a single case of abuse ever reported. And in fact, when we supported the expansion of DNA, we also supported strengthening the statutes against abuse, so it's now a crime if someone abuses a DNA sample. But so far, fortunately, it has not been an issue.
So, Richard Aborn, if you're elected Manhattan District Attorney, who should play you on Law and Order?
Oh, you know, I think Sam Waterston's doing just a fine job. I think we ought to keep the guy.
Oh, he would, but instead of representing supposedly someone else, he'd be representing you.
There you go.
All right, Richard Aborn, running for Manhattan District Attorney, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We're hearing from all three candidates running in the Democratic primary to succeed Robert Morgenthau as Manhattan DA, that primary next Tuesday. We've heard from Leslie Crocker Snyder and Richard Aborn now, and we turn to Cy Vance Jr., a partner at the Manhattan-based white-collar law firm Morvillo Abramowitz, assistant DA in Manhattan from 1982 to 1988, started a law firm in Seattle representing white-collar criminals, returned in 2004. His father was the Secretary of State under President Jimmy Carter. That's why some of you know the name Cy Vance. His endorsements include the New York Times, the Daily News, the UFT, Nydia Velasquez, Gloria Steinem, David Dinkins, and Caroline Kennedy. Mr. Vance, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on.
You've received the endorsement of the current DA Morgenthau. I think I left his name off that original list. But is that a two-way street? What do you think needs to change in the way the DA's office is run? We heard a list of things from Mr. Aborn and Ms. Crocker-Snyder.
Well, Brian, I think we are building on a very solid foundation, first and foremost. This district attorney's office has had a remarkable history and a tradition of fairness and nonpartisanship and integrity that has distinguished it and defined it. And I intend to keep that fundamental foundation and tradition. But I'm running for this race as someone who has been both a prosecutor and a defense lawyer for more than 20 years, as well as a criminal policy expert. So I bring to the office my experiences and new ideas to, I believe, improve the office going forward. And specifically, Brian, I would lay out three or four for you. First, I've talked about moving the office toward a community-based justice model of prosecution, where we have teams of prosecutors within the office assigned to groupings of precincts in Manhattan so that the lawyers can both understand in a very detailed way, block by block, building by building, the crime issues and crime patterns in the neighborhoods, and work more closely with the police and the community organizations to develop crime prevention strategies and to achieve more effective law enforcement. It's worked around the country in other cities. I think it's a great idea for Manhattan and one that I support and would be different than the current model. An increased emphasis, Brian, on cases involving domestic violence. We have seen, unlike other crimes which have decreased around New York City and New York State, thankfully, the domestic violence is one of those crimes that has resisted that trend. And so what I have proposed, Brian, is essentially a broad-gauge anti-violence plan which calls for changing legislation for repeat domestic violence offenders so that the courts have greater control over and greater ability to provide more serious punishment where necessary for folks who commit domestic assaults.
Leslie Crocker Snyder says she's the one who really owns this issue. She founded the Sex Crimes Prosecution Bureau, and she's been talking about this issue and working on it for many, many years. So if people are interested in domestic violence as a key issue for the Manhattan DA, they should vote for her. Why not?
Well, I've always said that I give great credit to Leslie Crocker Snyder for her resume. I think she was the first prosecutor in that office for roughly a year, maybe a year and a half, 2 years. Linda Fairstein was then the prosecutor who took that unit over and ran it for more than 20 years and took it to the state of national prominence in which it is held currently. And Linda is supporting my candidacy. I think it's not – this isn't a man-woman issue. It's who has put together a program that addresses the broad range of issues of violence against women and intimate partners. The program that I've laid out, Brian, which ranges from attacking human trafficking to sexual assault to domestic violence, is broad and it's comprehensive, and it's one of the reasons that I've received the support of people who pay a great deal of attention to these issues and care a great deal about them, like Gloria Steinem, Anna Quinlan, and others.
I didn't say man-woman issue, by the way. I said she founded the office.
No.
But she took the time in her interview here to point out that you have lived 17 of the last 21 years, I think her stat was, in Seattle. I think at least on one other occasion she used the word fled to say when you went to Seattle in the late 80s, working away from New York at a period of high crime here in the city. And she said she stayed here. Her family was under police protection because of some of her work in law enforcement. And so she's making an issue of you not living in New York for 17 years, ending in 2004. Why shouldn't people consider that relevant with her and Mr. Rayburn being in New York much of that time?
Well, Brian, of course, the voters can consider relevant whatever the voters believe is important, and I obviously respect that. But let me just start answering the question by, number one, I am a New Yorker, was born here. My family, to the extent it matters, has been here for generations. I served for 6 years in the office. I have been back in New York since 2004. I'm a well-known lawyer in the city, and I have a full understanding of the issues confronting the Manhattan DA's office, both from my practice as a prosecutor and my practice as a lawyer today. My time in Seattle, Brian, I think is actually enhances my capacity to do the job better, as Scott Stringer, the borough president, indicated in his recent endorsement of me. This is a national law office. The Manhattan DA's office handles cases that are not just local, but national and, in fact, international in scope. My practice as a defense lawyer over the last 20 years has been a national practice. And so I have dealt with complex cases all around the country. That kind of expertise, that kind of breadth of experience, I think is very important to lead an office whose breadth of cases is so large and vast.
Could that also be a weakness? Leslie Crocker Snyder pointed out that she opposed some of what she saw as Morgenthau's territoriality in prosecuting international white-collar crime cases that I guess she thought would have been more the federal government's turf while he could spend more time protecting the local population. Would the experience that you just emphasized tend to lead you in that direction as well?
Not at all, Brian. In fact, I think just the opposite. I have worked my entire career as a member of the Rackets Bureau when I was in the Manhattan DA's office, as well as throughout my career on a national practice and dealing with federal authorities and serving on sentencing commissions, dealing with federal and state issues. I think I have, frankly, among all the candidates running, a far greater involvement with, historically, an understanding of the federal justice system. I've defended many, many cases and complex federal cases around the country. So rather than knowing less about how to work cooperatively with federal authorities, I think, in all honesty, I will bring a far greater understanding of, experience in, and ability to work cooperatively with federal brother and sister organizations, and I intend to. I believe law enforcement is a cooperative venture. The citizens expect the state officials and the federal officials to work in coordination and collaboration. My background will enable me to do that, to understand the federal statutes, to understand how that system is structured, and so I think among the three candidates, I'm in reality uniquely qualified to bring that federal experience to help me work more closely with federal authorities.
And what about stop and frisk? Any less tough or tougher on the police in the way they use it than your predecessors here today?
Well, I haven't heard my predecessors here today, but my position on stop and frisk is that I am very concerned with the statistics that, looking at 2008, that 500,000 individuals were stopped in New York City. A very, very small percentage of those stop and frisk cases actually resulted in an arrest, i.e. with contraband or actual illegal conduct having been demonstrated. And the overwhelming majority are young men and women of color. So I don't think it is...
And the deputy commissioner, as I said to Richard Ayborn, was on the program recently, Paul Brown, and said, this is not some random roaming the streets and stopping people to see if they have guns. This is a response to specific reported crimes and then flooding the zone of the crime to see, to stop individuals who fit a basic description of the perp.
It is certainly, number one, I respect Police Commissioner Kelly and his staff, let me make that clear, and what they've accomplished. But when you're dealing with stop and frisk, you have basic constitutional requirements that are the predicate for a law enforcement officer to stop any citizen. There has to be, you know, a clear, articulable reason for the officer to stop that individual. When we're dealing with the volume of numbers that we're talking about and the overwhelming majority of those numbers being young men and women of color, what I think the problem is that this policy has not necessarily proven to be particularly effective from a law enforcement strategy and is, in fact, I think, destabilizing from a community perspective, engendering a great deal of resentment and anger in communities of color around New York. So I think the downsides are outweighing the upsides, and I would address that issue directly with the commissioner. But I do think the issue of race, which it raises, is extremely important in law enforcement, and why I've called for bringing in the Vera Institute to work with me as Manhattan DA to conduct a racial bias review within the office to make sure our important charging decisions, plea bargaining, bail, grand jury practice, and sentencing recommendations are, in fact, race neutral.
30 seconds.
Yeah.
Since you've gotten the endorsements of Morgenthau and the Times and the Daily News, some are pegging you as the establishment candidate. It's good to have all those endorsements, but is there an establishment downside to that?
Well, I've also been endorsed by the Amsterdam News and El Diario. I think I have gone out, Brian, and laid out throughout this entire process a clear, articulable program for how I'm going to protect Manhattan's residents, and at the same time, using my years of experience as a trial lawyer and policy expert, how I'm going to do it by enhancing fairness. So when you have the New York Post and the Amsterdam News endorsing the same candidate, that's not an establishment candidate. That's a candidate who's come out with a broad vision that is both effective and fair, and that's why those endorsements are so meaningful.
And if you're elected, who should play you on Law and Order?
I've already got a letter out to George Clooney.
All right. We have Clooney for Vance. We have continue with Sam Waterston for Ayborn. And we have Angelina Jolie for Leslie Crocker Snyder. You're all on the record now. Cy Vance Jr., running for Manhattan DA in the New York Democratic primary on Tuesday. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we will take a look at the new non-Geary design for the Nets arena. It could be just the latest of the Ratner Corporation's troubles trying to develop Atlantic Yards. Stay with us.